is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, we find ourselves into some interesting times, my friends. And, I bring it back to the quote from Sun Tzu. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. Of course, the challenge right now is we don't know the enemy, do we now? And that, to me, is the problem which creates all this fear. Fear is the word that is driving, really, the economic markets. It's driving the medical community. It's driving the entire infrastructure and the world economy, the world mood, if you will, and certainly here in America here as this pandemic. Now, this is something that none of us have experienced in our lifetime to this level. We've not seen this before. So that creates more fear and the uncertainty of all of that. I want to talk about all of that today and a whole lot more. As you know, the big story is the president declares a national emergency, and that really has to take front and center. You see the tipsy-turvy of the markets here and the economic conditions that are impacting a lot of people, just about everybody. That's been going on the last couple of weeks here. Let's get started with the program here, friends, and I would like to bring on and introduce you to Harry Dent. Harry is an economic forecaster and New York Times bestselling author. In fact, many of his books are in the America Out Loud bookstore and can be found on Amazon. He's the editor of the free newsletter, Economy and Markets. We'll talk more about that. Harry, it's good to have you here. These are crazy conditions. I don't know that any of us could have predicted this. It was really a whiplash week for stocks. It landed the major indexes in really a bear market for the first time in 11 years as this coronavirus is sweeping everything. And again, the word seems to be fear. From a political standpoint, with the president declaring a national emergency, that gave markets a very interesting boost on a late Friday afternoon. And we had one of the largest increases in history there that happened. Tell us more of what you think about this national emergency and the markets over the last couple of weeks, Harry.
Well, first of all, Malcolm, I've been looking for a top to the greatest bubble in modern history. I was looking more towards May and maybe as late as election, because I know how much stimulus and push there always is into an election. Mm-hmm. And of course, Donald Trump has huge incentives for this. But this is what I call a real black swan. Economists use black swan to basically as a cop out for things they should have seen, like a big bubble or a debt bubble building up that will burst. This is really this. Virus has come, but all of them are different, and it's more lethal than some, and this gets infected earlier without showing symptoms. So this has really snuck up, and the markets didn't react to this until it hit Italy, a Western country, not Asia. And Italy, the Italians, they don't just shake a little hand or one peck on the cheek. That's a peck on each cheek, and then one of the lips, and then
Right.
And so they have really had the worst because they have such natural human contact. I'm a little worried about that down here in Puerto Rico. But this thing has caused the type of first crash I've been warning my readers and subscribers about. The first crash of a bubble like this is 40% in two and a half months. It comes so fast and so hard. Now, the markets did not show signs of topping. It did not show that the smart money, which I measure, was selling into this last rally. So this was not a natural top. This virus came out and caused this, but because the markets are so overvalued and so pumped up on stimulus now for 11 years, they are having that sort of crash. So 30% down already into Friday. I was expecting a bounce on Friday. We really hit some support levels finally. But we could see a bounce and one more downturn in April. I'll tell you real quick my view on this virus. We are overreacting to it. It's good, too, because the tiger countries reacted really fast and kept it at bay. But the markets are overreacting to how bad it's going to be. I think this is going to start to taper off in April like all flu seasons do. Think of this as just a more infectious and more lethal flu.
That's right.
So warm weather works against this very rapidly. So I think this will peter out. I think markets may be down stocks another 10% by sometime in April after bouncing here. That's my best guess, and it's hard to guess. The Fed just put off the biggest bazooka in history, $1.5 trillion minimum, up to $3 trillion pledge for this repo crisis. And what I've heard, and I have to confirm on Monday with my research guy, the banks have already drawn down $780 billion of that. This is huge, more money printing coming into the financial markets. So once we get over this scare, the markets are going to have plenty of liquidity and ammunition to come roaring back. So I think we get a rebound out of this towards the election. And of course, how that works out could depend. A natural rebound would be 4 to 5 months after a crash like this.
Okay.
So I think this is kind of the first crash. We may or may not make new highs in some of these, but I do think we'll get a strong rally out of this. But I do feel, with all of my cycles and indicator, Malcolm, as you know, the demographic trends, the technology trends, bubble and debt trends are all against this market. It's extremely overvalued.
You never could have predicted this pandemic, obviously, and what it's done to the markets.
This was clearly a black swan.
Yeah, that's absolutely, yeah. Let me ask you what you just say, the premise you bring out to the election. I like the way you phrase all that. What do you think, Harry, the greatest threat to the, with everything you just laid out, to a market recovery is? What's the greatest threat to this not happening in the way that you say there?
Well, the biggest thing, if this thing really keeps exploding, I was first shocked, Malcolm, on Friday when the Fed first announced this bazooka of all bazooka. This is massive, massive. I knew they would inject money for the repos, but not $1.5 trillion up to $3 trillion. I mean, no limits. The markets didn't even react to that because at the same day, it was reported in Italy that in one day they had a jump from 12 to 15,000 cases and an extra 190 deaths. Like, what? That's accelerating. So Italy is really ground zero here. In the U.S., it's Washington State, but China's already flattening out. The other Asian tigers handled this very well, tested right off the bat and nailed it down and quarantined the people that had it without shutting down their economies. So this the biggest thing, if this keeps accelerating and really just takes off because of momentum, because this isn't, that's the problem with these flus and epidemics. Mm-hmm. People can look later and say, well, only so many people die. But if you don't take extreme measures like we're starting to now, and of course the Asian tigers do, and Italy is totally shut down.
It is. Yeah.
If you don't do that, it could be much worse because these are exponential.
So you think that the things he did, the national emergency and these really unprecedented steps they've taken, you support that? You think it's a good thing?
Absolutely. The thing we didn't do right, we should have had tests. We should have done like South Korea and Taiwan and Singapore.
Right.
You start testing all travelers and all suspect people.
Right.
I mean, South Korea is a quarter of our size, not even that. And they tested 200,000 people right off the bat. I mean, so in that curtailed, their death rate was only 0.6%. China was 3.5%. U.S. has been 2.5 to 3%. Italy is 6.7%.
Right.
That's why it's so bad there. So that's why it's the worst there. So Italy's really the kingpin. And does it spread to Germany and France? I think U.S. is less a danger than Germany and France and Northern Europe.
All right. Now, let me ask you this. This is a little tricky here, what I want to talk to you about next. But I want to talk about your really honest feelings about billionaires, potentially, maybe others that have the ability to manipulate the market. Now, hear me out a moment here. As you just stated a moment ago, we're in a political election year. The stakes could never be higher. And you know what that means, Harry. I mean, I think all listeners know that behind all this, when we're talking about an election of this magnitude, it's a big decision because it's going to shape the country, what direction we go with, who gets into that office in 2020, and what shapes out in Congress as well. So there's, you know, the manipulation of the market. I'm hearing a lot of people in my ear that are saying that, you know, when you look at the performance of the Dow Jones Industrial Average since 1900, really, Harry, market shocks have exceeded the current route and magnitude on three occasions, I understand, 1914, 1929, and 1987, and of course the 1914, this is what led to the Great Depression, so Talk to me on manipulation of markets specifically. Is there any fear of that? I mean, you and I never talk about that. Is it what's the fear factor in that?
Markets have been manipulated since 1987 and Alan Greenspan. The central banks have always used lowering interest rates to stimulate an economy when you slow down or go in a recession. And every time you fight the economy, you know, getting rid of excess debt and bad companies and banks and stuff, which is a healthy thing to do. It's like having a cold or something and getting rid of toxins in your body. You shouldn't stop that process. They stop it. The Federal Reserve was created in 1913, kept stimulating. Then you get the Roaring 20s bubble, because bubbles come out of debt bubbles and stimulus like this. And then the big crash. So we've been stimulating since 1987.
But not the government. What about political players, operatives, trying to manipulate the market, these billionaires who are trying to politically offset things? Does that make any sense?
Well, first of all, they can manipulate elections. The Koch brothers single-handedly knocked out Mitt Romney as even a candidate last time. So they have that sort of power in funding for elections. And of course, it's not just billionaires. The largest, most leveraged traders always manipulate the market. When the markets go up, they feed it and stuff. And when they think it's overvalued, they short it with massive leverage.
All right, let me ask you this now. A lot of people, they don't want a socialist in there. I don't believe these billionaires want a socialist in there, to my knowledge. So does that, well, hold on now. Does that give Trump an advantage in this particular season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Electoral College is not as much in his favor. Michigan, I think, in another state that he won last time are not polling in his favor. Florida, with all the Puerto Ricans that went there, it may not go in his favor, but I don't count Trump out, because, you know, he knows how to spin things. And yes, as somebody said, capitalists, you know, the players in the market, investors and capitalists, they like capitalism. They do not want Bernie Sanders. Biden is tolerable, but that's not preferable. All these people are going to raise taxes, reverse the corporate tax cut, things like that. So, I mean, that's bubble over.
Well, they're going to cripple us. Those people will cripple us. You agree with that? I mean, of these. Yeah.
Democrat wins, it's bad for the market. Bernie wins, bubble over. Markets will be down 25% in a couple days.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
This is the start.
All right, in our last moment or so left, I want folks to get some advice from you. You know this stuff better than most anybody. And so let's talk about the listeners, regular Americans, Harry, who have those investments out there. I've had calls in over the last couple of weeks. People are absolutely panicked. People that need to take their money out in the next couple of years are overly panicked, who've worked all their lives, who are up in age, very concerned people, who've invested and they see this market and they're in tears. What's your best advice to folks?
Well, you know, you really, this is not something to sit through. This is a once in a lifetime bubble burst after a great debt bubble, and now a financial asset bubble. This is what the central banks did this time, created a financial asset bubble to stimulate the economy. Quantitative easing wasn't just lowering interest rate, it was pumping money into the markets. Markets go up, people feel richer and create a bigger bubble. So this is something you need to get out on bounces in stocks. You need to get out of real estate early. Stocks you can get out anytime, even if you're down like now. Real estate freezes up. Real estate will probably be the last thing to peak in this cycle. But when it does, it'll be very hard to sell. You need to get out of overvalued real estate and stocks. I'd wait for a good bounce here. I think short term, you're going to get a bounce, you know, maybe another 10% up or some 5 or 10% up. You can sell on that. But I think end of the election, if you hold a little longer, there may be some more downside, but you probably get to where maybe only the market's only down 10%. Maybe we can get near the highs on this election rally that's likely. Right. But you don't know that's going to happen. Yeah. The next 2 years is going to be the most dangerous time in your lifetime. And it's going to take even longer for that, for real estate to shake out. So okay, you got to be out of stocks between this year and late 2022. After that, then you can get back in.
HarryDent.com is where you can find out more there, friends. And again, that free newsletter and all of that, economy and markets, you'll find more information on that as well. Let's bring on now Arnetta Notkin into the program here, please. Arnetta is 30 years spent working on Wall Street, and certainly it's a career of working with the financial markets. She's a commentator producer here at America Out Loud. Arnetta, you hear Harry Dent there. Very interesting, I thought, interchange with him when he laid out the strategies. And let's talk about the political ramifications, because he talked about what was going to happen between now and November, between now and the election.
Election years are always volatile, no question about it. But this volatility is not natural. This virus is a weapon that's been handed to or manufactured by, and I will change the word, not global hedge funds, but the globalist hedge funds, which are the billionaires that you mentioned. They've been handed this wonderful tool to use and weaponize against this president. And they have the ability to short sell this market, which is much of what we're seeing that's going on.
Arnetta, so are we saying, or are you saying, who else would they want in there? Let's talk about that beside a President Trump. I mean, do they want a Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden in there? Are they looking for a socialist agenda? I mean, what do you think they're looking for?
It doesn't matter what the person that running, what their story is. The person that wins will be their puppet, and they truly don't care. They don't care what their terms are, what their platforms are, because the globalist billionaires and elite are the ones that will be managing our government, our country, in order to facilitate this one world order.
Well, let's agree on this. The severity, you talk about a down cycle right now. If you ended up with one of these others in the market, I think your market is going to gyrate all over the place. I mean, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a chapter of complete uncertainty and recklessness. And if that happened, do you agree with that?
I agree with it. It is actually the market will cease to exist as we know it.
Wow. Wow. Boy, that's a statement. And I can't disagree with you, actually, with what you say now. So you and I would agree with the fact that we believe President Trump is sort of the calm hand in all of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do not know or have never known anyone that could handle this.
Right. If we get him in there, if we, the people, get him in there, and if we go to bat for this thing. But now, if you listen to Harry, and he kind of agreed with that point. Is that not correct?
He did.
He did. Absolutely. That surprised me because I wasn't sure where he was going to go.
That surprised me also.
But, well, he was being honest, and I find him an honest broker of information. As far as the market goes in best advice, again, for people, and you heard what he was saying there, and he called it right out as a black swan. Of course, you can't predict a pandemic. He's been talking about the fact that markets are, they're just over-monetized, and we've invested way too much. We're over-mortgaged, in other words, in this country. He's been saying that as long as I've known him, Arnetta, you know?
Yes, yes. And he had a point. He had a point. But it's also, when you add in the political aspects of this, it goes beyond a black swan. This black swan is not a natural black swan. This black swan is a manufactured.
See, that's the point I was trying to make with him, that I knew he'd be very careful about and ad libbing on, that this was, there was nothing natural about this, and we certainly, nobody's seen this one coming, nor did he. He could not have predicted this.
Just to give you a historical perspective, this market crash, it only took 21 days, which is half of the time that it took in 1929.
Well, let's do this here. Let's ramp it up now, friends, on the program here. There is a lot to talk about here again. Let's try to identify some of the issues, challenges. Where do we go next? We have a star-studded group coming in here next year, and we'll bring this thing forward, talk about all the top stories here on Viewpoint here. And again, as I'm always trying to do, listen, reality, yes, truthful, absolutely, but also a dose of hope. Because without hope, friends, and hope to me is the answer back to fear. We have to have hope in our thoughts and ideas here. Stay right there, friends, as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
We'll be right back.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
To unleash the full power of the federal government in this effort today, I am officially declaring a national emergency. Two very big words. The action I am taking will open up access to up to $50 billion of, very importantly, a large amount of money for states and territories and localities in our shared fight against this disease. In furtherance of the order, I'm urging every state to set up emergency operation centers effective immediately. You're going to be hearing from some of the largest companies and greatest retailers and medical companies in the world. They're standing right behind me and inside of me. I'm also asking every hospital in this country to activate its emergency preparedness plan.
It was certainly a historical moment in time for this nation and certainly for the world at large. You could feel the temperature rising here as the president was speaking to the nation and declaring a national emergency and exactly what that meant. And I think, you know, he's put it out there in the previous couple of moments that this is a time for all people to come together, all Americans to come together, clearly, and not play partisan politics. That could only be our best wish and hope, couldn't it be now, people? Probably more of a fairy tale, but we know how that goes in the political world for sure. What this national emergency does now, by the president doing that for this pandemic, it opened access to at least $50 billion immediately in financial assistance for states of various localities, and other important things that they deem necessary. It allows him certain rights to be able to maneuver without Congress to move quickly. It authorizes the president under our Constitution to do the things he needs to do to keep this country safe and secure. That's the concept of this. Now, I don't think the president ever anticipated having to declare a national emergency. And you have the sense of that as you heard his opening remarks there. You could feel the tension in the air. You could feel you could cut that with a knife almost here. Let's start there, friends, and talk about exactly the political ramifications of that and the importance of the national emergency here. I'd like to bring on here Dr. Jay Lair joins us. He's a senior policy analyst with the International Climate Science Coalition, former science director of the Heartland Institute. He's a political analyst here at America Out Loud and a weekly columnist here. Also joining us right here, Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality. Ava's a best-selling author. Again, all our books are on the America Out Loud bookstore as well, I remind you all. Dr. Jay Lair, let's start off right there, my friend, and talk about this national emergency. First of all, was it the right thing to do? Does it help stir the country properly? Does it create more panic by doing that? And was this the right step for the president to do?
Malcolm, it was the only thing to do. The media drove him to it. They have expanded exponentially what the real concern is, certainly 10 times less of a problem than every year's flu, but the media was on this. The frenzy that was created, the president had absolutely no choice to do it. It's unfortunate that he had to, and of course, worse is the reaction around the country where, you know, there are no sports, there are no theaters, there are no movies. I think that's too much, but at least he got the country on the same page, and he opened up this reserve of $50 billion that he can now use to help people that are really put in a bad way by not being able to go to work or take care of their children who are not in school. There's a long line of problems that can be handled, not over the top financially, but it really puts him in a good position. He had to do it. It was the right thing to do.
Jay, the real goal, Jay, of this national emergency, I think, more so, as you just stated, closing all the events and movies and God knows what else, just about all kinds of things are closing here. And it is a weird moment in time. And you can feel it. I mean, you can absolutely feel it. But here's the thing. The real goal of all that is to flatten the curve. Because as you see these pandemics, they spike. And then your system can't handle it, your healthcare. So you've got to, so as a nation, you
know, how do you get 300 and, you know, some odd million people to step back and to take proper precautions, which is where we're at now. But the whole concept of this, do you agree with that, is to flatten the curve, right?
Well, I think that's the good part that comes out of it. I think it could have been handled differently with less of the media onslaught, but that is a good resolve that clearly will happen. We will avoid a spike. I don't know how bad that spike would have been. The curve will be flattened because everybody certainly looks toward normalcy occurring in 3 or 4 months, and I think that will be the case.
Yeah. So, Ava, interesting. We talk about flattening the curve. We talk about all of these changes in travel and the way our lives are, you know, the way we live our lives. But as the president has said, after we get through this, it could be even a brighter, he's trying to paint a picture of a brighter future for all. Back to these extremes, Jay has expressed, well, these were extreme measures, though, in doing all of this. Was there another way to do it? Because when he talks about the media, my point of this really is, Ava, that the media is going to politicize this no matter what you do, because here's what's really weird about all this. This is happening in a political election year. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. If you were to write a book on this, Ava, we'd think you were crazy.
Well, I know when I'm reading articles in the New York Times that say 160 million to possibly 240 million people could be infected over the course of this epidemic. Mm-hmm. The CDC is estimating 2.4 million to 24 million. So these are widely disparate numbers, mm-hmm. okay? They're not really making a lot of sense right now, but this is an exponential kind of virus. And the other underlying thing that we had to have to understand is 60% of Americans have at least one chronic health issue, and 40% have more than two. So the big health issues are heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and lung disorders like asthma and so on, COPD, smokers. I mean, when you think about this, I mean, 34 million people in America smoke. So, I mean, this could affect a lot of people, not just the elderly folks. Mm-hmm. It could affect a lot of people. So President Trump was using his better judgment. And not only in the health of the American people, but he was using better judgment as well with the financial outlay.
Yeah, and we're not going to get the media to stop politicizing this, Ava. It's not going to happen.
No, actually, Malcolm, the worst thing in this country, the biggest danger is the media right now.
That's right.
And the other danger is the Democrat Party.
And yet, you know, you almost think, people, you get to a point where things get really bad, like how much worse could they be, where people really wake up and then they say, oh, okay, you know, I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans really working together as Americans, which the president has presented that theory out there. We haven't seen that in a long time in this nation. But then, you know what I'm saying? You think about that and you say, how much worse could it get before these people would come together? And you know, I can't really answer that to you because the hatred and the vitriol are so bad. I don't even know what that would take. I don't know. To lose millions of people? I don't know what that takes, people. That's how sick it is. I mean, it sounds weird that we're having this conversation. I mean, certainly well-minded people get what I'm talking about here. But, well, listen, so on the political side of this, so the House Democrats finally reached a deal. This was really over into Saturday morning. It's got to go to the Senate now, of course. But the House of Representatives passed the coronavirus aid package, and it was absolutely a bipartisan vote, 363-40. Now, I do like the way this was played out so much. I do, because the president was very clear in what he said. He tweeted out that Democrats and Republicans both should vote on this measure. Now, Mnuchin has been working with Pelosi on this, so they knew what it was. They got a lot of the bad stuff out of there. They were trying to stick stuff about abortion in there and, you know, free Cheerios for people on the, you know, it's just stupid stuff. You know, the pork in these bills is insane. And that's what they were trying to do there. But finally, they got to a point where this happened, 363-40. And now it's on to the Senate here. And we'll see more about that. Let's bring on now Jim McKay. And Jim is a political analyst and commentator, radio producer here at America Out Loud. He's a 30-year background in global technology, telecommunications, and pharmaceuticals here. Jim, you see the vote. You see what's happening now with them coming together here. You know, I guess that sends probably a good mood to the nation that at least they've come to some sort of but that's not before theatrics, before all these tricks that were trying to be pulled through the House, huh?
Absolutely. President, after the vote was made, issued a quick statement saying I fully support the, it's HR 6201 is the vote for Families First Coronavirus Response Act is what he's calling it. The seriousness of a national emergency is in the law equivalent to the Congress declaring war. So we have a real serious thing going on here. And to politicize this bill that it took them 5 or 6 days to put it together. They were going to leave town, not vote on it, by the way.
Let's bring back on Arnetta, is still with us on the program here. Arnetta, now let's keep it on the political piece of this here before we get into China and all of this and where this thing is originating from here. What do you see now in the political environment? What do you see here in the next many weeks and months here as this bill now takes forward? Is there any hope that you have that these political parties can really somehow, in an election year, with all of these things going against us, unify or try to come together as Americans to do what's right for the public?
I don't think they will come to an agreement on anything, because Trump's main desire is, as you said, to keep our constitutional republic safe and secure. The progressive far left, who manage all of the political elites, their desire is the polar opposite of that. They do not want us safe and secure. They want this country to be at their mercy. And the only way they can do that is to destroy the Republican candidate for president.
So you're not optimistic based on that, because the game has always been for these last many years to pull Trump out of office.
That's correct. I'm not optimistic about them agreeing on anything. And I think that had the national emergency not been issued,
right.
You would not have gotten the bill passed in the House.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you got to think about what lessons we learn out of this too, Arnetta, because, you know, when you think about, you know, the fact that they don't ever work together, even under these kinds, I mean, if they don't work together under these kinds of extremes, when there's so much at stake, then you really have to question what all Americans have to question then, what is the end goal? What are the motivations? And why not? I mean, I think any reasonable American would see that. And so you have to begin to question. Let me bring on again here another great voice on the network here. Ilana Friedman joins us. And you know, Ilana is a big voice here at America Out Loud. She's a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator, host here on the platform, and certainly a weekly columnist. Ilana, picking up where Arnetta states here with the political parties, but, you know, when there's been so much damage, and we say damage control, and we talk about the president, and, you know, everything that's happened over the last 3.5 years, more or less, Ilana, here, it's kind of hard to have any hope in this realm, isn't it?
Well, I always like to have hope, but I think there is absolutely no excuse for the behavior of the Democrats. I mean, they've been reprehensible throughout the 3-year period and even before, but in the face of this catastrophic pandemic, that they should still be playing politics. The fact that Nancy Pelosi, for example, wanted to slip in a piece about abortion, which has absolutely nothing to do with the pandemic, just because she could. And that is such a highly politicized issue. I mean, it speaks to how low the Democrats have come, and she's one of the leaders of the Democrats. So I find it reprehensible, and I think it's inexcusable. But I still have hope, because this is America. Mm-hmm. And things do happen here, and things change. And we have had situations before the Second World War, for example, where we were highly polarized, and yet somehow we came together when the war happened. I think this is going to have to happen, and we have the ability to raise our voices in November 2020. And we can vote for change.
This is America, after all. We have to have hope, right, people? I mean, isn't that really it? That is the shining city on a hill. It's the vision of what we all see in this great country here. One of the themes I want to continue to talk to you all about is the lessons learned. You know, we're going through some real pain right now, and there's going to be some pain ahead. And what I'm thinking ahead here is, you know, the mighty America that we are, this great country. There's a couple of things that I'm worried about. And let me just speak frankly with you all, and they are this. One is, you know, when you're down and you're at a low point, that is the time that your enemies have the potential to come after you in full might. Don't lose sight of that. It gives me great worry and pause because we are in a very vulnerable place right now. And that should not be lost on anybody. So let's keep it real, but understand the stakes here. The ramifications of that, I think, are significant here. The other thing is lessons learned. Learning lessons from all of this. Because quite frankly, we should be in a better place to be able to handle something like this had we taken the precautions and the steps necessary prior to all of this, and had we been in a better position with our nation's manufacturing and with our nation's ability to handle things on a global, in a pandemic situation like this. But to be able to have all the tools and the respirators and the medications and the tools to know, and in fact, the president even spoke about that, quite frankly, on the White House lawn, as I recall. I believe he even said that, you know, this will learn some great lessons from this. It'll never happen again because we'll be ready. And I believe he means that. I believe he means what he says with that, because I know as a great American himself, he is a preparer. We're all, in some way, Boy Scouts. We want to prepare for the unknown. We want to prepare for tomorrow, right? And that's the message that I get from him there. Interestingly enough, friends, there was some interesting stuff about China. And this was this is really unbelievable, this next piece of the conversation. But some interesting barbs back and forth about what they're calling the virus and where it originated from. And it's almost hard to believe this next conversation, but senior U.S. officials, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, have referred to the pathogen as the Wuhan virus, which we've all heard many times. Or it's also being referred to as the Chinese coronavirus. And then there's, of course, the official name, COVID-19. Which is what the WHO calls it. But, you know, China now is accusing the Trump administration of racism and xenophobia. Sounds like a play coming from the political playbook here in the States here. But that's what China is doing. And they're casting themselves, I guess, more or less, for a better word, I would say, as a victim in all of this. And there's a lot of talk about this, but Beijing has been very critical of this. Even their foreign ministry came out and said, hey, this is not something that originated in Wuhan or China. They're saying that it was planted by America. Now, I find this story over the top. And when you think about our relationship with China and everything that's happened here, this is hard to imagine here. So let me bring on here next on this, Ilana, let me bring you back on this talk right here. And then I want to bring some others in on this here. But the way this has been laid out right now in regards to China hitting back like this, what's behind all this, you think, with China? They're up to their usual tricks?
Well, yes, as usual, they're lying, but they're doing something else, which is very interesting. They're taking a page out of the Democrats' playbook. It's called projection. And what they're doing is putting on the United States the crime that was committed by China in China. And they're saying that the Americans planted this when, in fact, the Chinese were every piece of information and intelligence that I have indicates that this not only originated in China, but it originated in a bioweapons lab in Wuhan. And when they start accusing the Americans of planting it, it's if it weren't so serious, it would be laughable.
Jay, you have a very interesting article, a column, your weekly column coming out on Tuesday. And really, you talk about China at great length, and you talk about the silver lining in all of this. And I think for those who don't know you, they will have to know that you are always an optimist, even under great stress or whatever the situation is. You always find that silver lining. And so it's an interesting read you have coming up, but you kind of point China out in such a way. Explain what your point is on that.
There is a gigantic silver lining in the coronavirus problem for American industry and for the American nation, short and long term. China has, regardless of everything that Ilana said, of how terrible they are, what the numbers are, China has lost prestige in the eyes of the world community. They were rising up as a major country. I think the world knows enough about what's going on to lower their esteem of China, and they will not quickly recover it. But more important for the economy, there's almost no one in our nation and probably most of the world whose supply chain has not been affected by what's going on in China. Regardless of how many have died there, we know that supplies are not coming out of China to help all the manufacturing products in our nation and the rest of the world. And that's what's been an economic killer. So the result is going to be that hundreds of American industries with small factories in China or depending on small factories in China are not going to let this happen again. And in the next few years, they're going to start making things right here in the United States where they should have been all along. But it was more efficient to make them there. But what we found out is now in this terrible situation, we're not resilient because...
Well, Jay, you know what's amazing about this too, Jay, is that President Trump, you think back to 2015, 2016, he ran on this entire agenda. Now, listen, we weren't talking any pandemics at that point. There were no viruses. We didn't know China would be the big bad boogeyman to the level of what's happened here. But the point is, the president was prophetic, really, in his view of China and how he's dealt with China with the trade and all of that. In trying to bring them to the table. And so when we talk about lessons learned, I think it's amazing to me, Jay, how the president has put a roadmap out there and a vision for what really needed to happen. He looked at our manufacturing core being gutted out. He looked at all the jobs that went overseas. He looked at the economic conditions in this country. And, you know, the previous administration said he would have to have a magic wand. Well, I got to tell you, by hell, he did have a magic wand. It's called the American Ingenuity and Innovation. Get off your ass and earn it. And that's what he's done, Jay. Yeah.
It's amazing. As I look back to the day he declared, June 16th, 2016, he laid out a plan from that day forward that astounds me, and you described it perfectly, Malcolm. It's all coming to pass, and probably the biggest thing that you can be guaranteed is going to come out of this, 90% of our drugs come from China.
That's right.
That is going to change. I would say, you know, within a year, it'll be down to 80%, and a year later, down to 70%, and all the other little parts that make up a puzzle of every product we make, those parts come from China. That has got to be changed. We have to be resilient that if we lose a very good supplier, we have other suppliers. Maybe they're a little more expensive, but they're going to be there. So the net of this is we are not going to see great numbers of deaths in this country to compare with what we have in the flu every year. We are going to end up in a few years with a much better economy, reliant more on ourselves than on China.
President John F. Kennedy said this. He said, a nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people. And that hit me, those remarks, they hit me in a way, because the truth is, my fellow Americans, is that the truth about China is not being shared with the American public. And then you ask yourself, what is it and why is it that our leaders are so scared of that truth? What are they actually afraid of? And that should give you all pause. What are they afraid of? It is a profound moment for all Americans and for the entire world, for that matter, as we see what's happening around the globe here. As we continue on here on Viewpoint this Sunday, it's an opportune time to thank you for being part of this mission here with us. We are a grassroots movement of real Americans, of patriots and people who passionately care about this nation and about this life that we've all been blessed and gifted to live, quite frankly. And so it should not be lost on any of us this is when you pull down for more and grab that strength in the core of your belly. Those butterflies can be a good thing. And you pull down and you just get that much stronger, people. And that's the moment we're at. I want to put a shout out to all of our great people at America Out Loud. It was just said to me again the other day here that from someone abroad in Europe, like, wow, it's amazing, the people you have over. It was a particular doctor who said, been reading and studying up on the stuff you have on the platform, and I'm truly amazed at the people you've been able to gather there on that network. Where did all this come from? What happened? And I look, and I really don't have the answer for that other than to say that we are an act of God. And I said that to somebody else the other day. We are an act of God here. So that kind of explains everything to you, and it should, as to why we are spirited and alive and well here and have those butterflies or that feeling, you know, that there's an undeniable feeling that comes with all this, people. It's hard to explain, but I think you know what I mean. If you understand that you're an American and you really appreciate this nation, this country, this life, and all that we really have been blessed for. But that doesn't mean there's not going to be challenges and evil ahead, because there will be. There will always be. And it always gets back to that fight of good versus evil now, doesn't it? And that's where we find ourselves. So as we the people rise and take the nation back to the power that it is, and then you can begin to see the light at the tunnel here. And then you can understand the vision and the reason there probably is a Donald J. Trump in Pennsylvania Avenue. You probably understand that more, and what that all means. Is he he's a vehicle. Trump probably is a vehicle, is what the way I would suggest to you. A means to an end to a better America, I would say. But there are bigger hands on all of this, and I believe that in my heart of hearts here. So, well, let's take a look now, as we continue on with the program here, about worst case estimates for the U.S. coronavirus deaths. Ava had alluded to these just a moment ago, and I'm going to have her opine on this in just a second here. But officials at the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention and epidemic experts from universities around the world just conferred last month, in fact, friends, on what might happen if the new coronavirus gained a foothold in these United States. In other words, how many people might die? How many people might be infected and need hospitalization? Are we prepared as a nation? And they said, well, between 160 million and 214 million people in the U.S. could be infected over the course of the epidemic. Now, let me explain one thing. That epidemic could be over the course of a year. It's not a quick hit. And that's what I mean by flattening out that cycle, that curve. That's what that means, people. You don't want to have all that happen at once, but let's not lose sight of the fact that this is a weaponized virus. This is not a common flu. This is not a little cold. This thing hits your lungs. It will kill you. If you're in a position that you're not in good health, you are at risk. And that always comes back to everything I always talk to you about our lifestyles and just feeling good and taking care of yourselves. Listen, I know I'm on the same page as you are. I've had to do that in my own life, taking time off from our busy schedules, walking, doing simple things in life, taking healthy cell for that matter. You got to take care of yourself. It's the one thing. So that kind of plays into everything we're talking about here. And if those numbers are anywhere near, we're talking about 200,000 to 1.7 million people could die from that. Now, again, these are projected numbers, but they are scenarios you have to consider. Ava, they're kind of scary when you look at these numbers and you understand what's really going on. And again, without trying to play into the fear, because I don't like that four-letter word, fear. I like the four-letter word that says hope, but we also have to be truthful, Ava, and understand what the ramifications are. Now, you yourself, I was reading the other day, you yourself have a little asthma problem. Are you concerned with this?
Oh, yes, of course I am. I mean, my asthma doesn't flare up often, but the way this disease works in a human being mm-hmm. is quite frightening. The word corona, as you probably know, is Latin for, it's a crown, okay? And the crown has these little picky things on it. And what those do when they enter the human being's body is those little picky things break into your white blood cells. And the white blood cells are what keep your immune system going. So we need to somehow reverse engineer this thing and figure out how to destroy it or have it self-destruct. And that's going to take time and a lot of money.
Now, do you realize they're talking about this becoming a regular seasonal flu now of some sort of seasonal disease?
It's so contagious. It is so contagious. And I'm sure you're all reading about this. that it lives on surfaces like stainless steel and in extreme temperatures. I mean, you have to have really frigid temperatures to mm-hmm. kill it, or very extremely hot temperatures. So yeah. No, this is something really we haven't seen before, I don't think. Not since, like, right. you know, 1918.
Right. Let's ask Jim. Jim, why do you think, when you hear Ava, when she puts it out there and describes it as such, when we talk about the origination from this, again, coming from China itself, so this was never supposed to be released. It was an accident, but it really wasn't. Jim, in kind of a weird way, in my own crazy language, I call it an intentional accident. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but why would I call it an intentional accident? And how do you look at this thing?
We said before, it's been generated in a weapons laboratory in China. Why do you create something like this? Why do you even fool around with it if you have no cure, no vaccine, nothing for it, other than to put together some, quote, evil use? And when you think about it, you have a virus, a weapon that can be distributed around the world, and without firing a shot, without firing a missile, you can disable the entire Western world's economies.
And that says a lot, what you just said. Now, that describes what weaponization means. How do you weaponize something? And for what means and reasons do you do that? Ilana, so we've got here, in a nutshell now, China went from 1,000 patients to 80,000 in a matter of roughly 6 weeks. Most of that came from that quarantined state of Hubei there, as you know. Italy went from around 20 cases and about 2.5 weeks later to 12,000. Now, that's the curve I was talking about flattening a moment ago. And, you know, that's kind of what's happened now. And so now I'm seeing stories of in Italy where there are doctors in emergency rooms, and I've read the stories, Ilana, that, and I see one quote here from a Dr. Francesca Mangiatordi, says, these are horrible choices they're having to make. She says, this is an emergency room doctor, says, these are the choices I would have never wanted to make. It's somewhat like being in a war. She said the outbreak of the virus in Italy has had major implications. And then, you know, then you look at Iran. They're building mass graves to bury the dead in Iran that nobody is talking about. They are dying out there at an unprecedented level here in Iran. And then you had what happened in South Korea. So these are other, I would say, epicenters, I guess, of the disease right now. South Korea looks like it's getting to the other side, but my golly, Iran and Italy and Europe as a whole is become new epicenters. And that's what President Trump is trying to avoid here. You agree with that?
I do agree with that. And I think President Trump has done something that hasn't been done in this country since the New Deal, I guess. After 9/11, I was very angry with George W. because he basically told the American people, well, don't you worry, you just go shopping and do your regular thing and we'll take care of everything. Well, that's not the way America works. Americans need to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Amen. And what Donald Trump has done has been to include Americans in the solution. Americans know very well now how they can protect themselves, what they need to do to keep themselves and their families safe. It may not always work, but at least they've been given the tools. The problem that we have is that we are likely to have vastly increased numbers of people sick, but we only have fewer than 1 million staffed hospital beds in this country,
right.
And we
That's
have a
right.
population of yeah. 330 million. Yeah. That is a very, very serious problem. It needs to be addressed immediately.
Yeah.
But what's happening in Iran, you asked, they're building these football-size mass graves, the size of a football field. And there are many of them. And they've already filled some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tens of thousands of people who've been
that
buried.
Are dying.
And
yeah.
they say, yeah, they have died. And they say that there's only
500.
500 dead. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just like what the Chinese have been doing. They've been
They lie a lot. They go around saying we have 500, like you say, and they got football fields full of the dead. And how do we know this, people? It's no conspiracy. We know this through satellite imaging. You know, so there's a debate happening Sunday evening with empty stands now, as you see the two Democrats, Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, go head-to-head. It's going to be quite interesting here into what happens with that debate. I think it's probably, my guess is it's going to be a very highly watched debate. In fact, it'll probably be have record numbers, I'm guessing, because there's not a hell of a lot more to be watching. There's no sports events or things like that happening here. Ava, let me get your thoughts on that debate. Actually, it's this evening. It's on Sunday evening. And also Arnetta yourself to comment on how do you think that plays into all of this? What do you expect to happen from that debate, Ava?
I don't expect much, to be honest with you. You look at the two people that are debating. You know, I mean, Bernie's going to take a buyout here, just like he did last time. So,
well, he's going to get a buyout, but Joe Biden, there's a chance that if he does a blunder, a big mistake or something, that could really put some. I think this is a very significant debate, Ava.
I think his blunders will be magnified in a debate setting.
Exactly.
But I think it's just catastrophic what the Democrats have to offer.
Right, but what do they do if Biden does, what if he looks like all of that in a bag of candy, if he just falls apart, I'm saying, and then Bernie Sanders is there as the vulture, he sees the opportunity. So let's play on that scenario. So what happens then if that happens?
Oh, I don't think it will change anything, to be honest with
you.
Wow. I don't.
So you believe that's it, the policy gods and the Democrat socialist operatives have spoken, and that's it?
That's how they work. You have to understand. Yeah. Right.
Interesting. Arnetta, you agree with that or you have a different thought?
No, I agree with Ava totally. And the commentators, the ones that are asking the questions, will cover for him. And they'll spin it so that it's to his advantage, even if he does make these awful gaffes.
Dr. J. Lair, I want to give you the last word, sir, in a point of optimism. Kind of bring us home as listeners hear your voice now and tell us, America, back to that beautiful country and the beautiful Americans and the shiny city on a hill and the silver lining you talk about all the time, and give us a moment of hope.
Well, I am the resident optimist, and I'm 83 years old. I've live a very healthy life. I've never been in a doctor's office, and next week my wife and I will go to the Caribbean to sail for a week and celebrate our 30th year of marriage and not worry one bit about getting ill.
Wow.
Because I can swim a full lap underwater. I swim 3 miles every week. And if you can take a deep breath and hold it for 10 seconds and let go, and you're not coughing, you don't have fibers in your lungs, it's kind of a very simple health test. And I don't think the numbers that have been bandied about millions dying in this country will come to pass. And I think at the end of this entire national emergency, our country will come out much stronger for all the reasons that you and others have said.
And now you see why I wanted to give Dr. J. Lair the last word. In 83-year-old, he's still a juvenile and never going to grow up. Amazing people, huh? Could we all just hope to be at that point, huh? Wow, wow. Well, I want to leave you with these words here from Thomas Paine, and it is this. I love the man that can smile in trouble, that can gather strength from distress and grow brave by reflection. 'Tis the business of little minds to shrink, but he whose heart is firm and whose conscience approves his conduct will pursue his principles unto death. Friends, thank you for being part of the journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.